AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here. Today we are going to be talking about the economic impact of climate change, because a new first-of-its-kind book details how the economic costs of climate change are hurting the U.S. economy and why lawmakers need to take action now. Climate change is no longer just an environmental issue or social issue. It's a growing economic issue that's killing our economy. That's according to Bob Keefe. He's the executive director of the national nonpartisan business group E2, Environmental Entrepreneurs, and author of the new book, Climatenomics, Washington, Wall Street, and the Economic Battle to Save Our Planet. Bob joins us now on the show. Bob, thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So let's start off with a very basic question. How is climate really changing and hurting our economy right now? Because so often we talk about, well, how it is going to be hurting our future in terms of the environmental damage that it can do, which is obviously very important. But I think sometimes it is missed that the economic costs of climate change are also enormous as well.
That's right. That's right, Brett. And if you look at what happened in the United States last year alone, you'll see why this is an economic issue. So last year, according to NOAA, we had nearly $150 billion worth of damage from climate-related disasters. That's wildfires in the West. It's hurricanes in the East, so many of them we had that we ran out of names for them. It's flooding and drought in the Midwest and in places like Minnesota. As a matter of fact, in Minnesota, the average cost of climate-related disasters to the state's economy is about $1 billion a year over the past 5 years. Look what's happening right now with flooding in northern Minnesota. It's been flooding since April in some parts of the state, and those waters are expected to continue to rise for the next few weeks. That's destroying homes. It's closing businesses. It's ruining tourism, which is so important to that part of the state. So it's costly, and we've got to do something about it. The good news is we can.
So let's talk about how we can make some changes, and I know this is detailed in your book as well, but talk about how some of the early adopters of climate change can benefit economically, whether it's people inventing new technology or coming up with ways to curb climate change and maybe put cleaner energy out into the environment. Talk about how they even benefit economically by being ahead of the curve, so to speak.
Right, right. Well, if you look at the basics, first of all, solar and wind right now is the cheapest power there is, Brett. And at the same time, every auto manufacturer in the country, actually in the world, is shifting to electric vehicles. And then there's the third part of the solution, if you will, which is energy efficiency. Simple products like LED lighting, Energy Star appliances, programmable thermostat, better windows and doors, simple things that can save money with every monthly power bill. Now, they're not exactly early adopters, but if you look at what almost every major American business is doing right now, they're shifting to clean energy. They're shifting to solar and wind. Why? Partly because it's the right thing to do, but a bigger part is probably because it's the cheapest power available. They're starting to shift now to electric vehicles. Why? Because, like all of us, they're sick and tired of paying $5, $6, some cases $7 a gallon for gasoline. It's cutting into profits. And energy efficiency is just a no-brainer when you think about the bottom lines of keeping office buildings lit or factories running and that sort of thing. So the solutions are out there, and American businesses are starting this shift. What we need to do now is make these types of technologies more available, more affordable to every single American. Right now we have legislation in Congress that can do that. We have states all across the country moving toward that. We need to move faster, though, and we need to make sure that our policymakers and our politicians get this done for all of us.
I think part of it, too, is incentivizing people to invest in these new types of technologies, and you brought up the point that it is important to try to reduce the costs, at least on the end consumer, to make sure that it is affordable to them, and already we're starting to see that in some aspects with electric cars and others. Talk about how we can make some of these technologies more affordable to the end users.
Well, right now, as I mentioned, we have legislation sitting in Congress. It's been sitting there since September that would do things like advanced tax credits for clean energy, for solar and wind. It would extend and expand tax credits for electric vehicles. It would invest in energy efficiency programs to make it more affordable and easier for American families to do things like install high-efficiency heat pumps and high-efficiency hot water heaters and simply swap out their light bulbs in some cases. This legislation also would invest into clean energy research and development and deployment, which is huge, especially when you think about other countries around the globe moving faster than we are when it comes to capturing this growing and huge economic opportunity that is clean energy.
And really, I think a big part of it is just looking at the future and taking economic advantage of change that comes, because usually if you are in an industry and you see that things are changing, the quicker you change, the more it's going to benefit you financially than just trying to go and stick with the way things have always been done. We've seen this throughout history in many different industries, including, of course, well, the media industry that I'm in, certainly in radio, right. But we've seen this, whether it's with electric cars eventually outpacing gas cars or other ideas as well. And I bring this up because you have a chapter in your book where you talk about how you were a technology reporter for a while in Silicon Valley during the age when the internet and mobile phones and the companies right. behind them were really starting to grow and embrace changing technology. So talk about if clean energy and climate tech is kind of taking a similar path to what we saw with that big technological boom back in the 90s and 2000s.
You know, I spent about 20 years as a journalist and a lot of that as a business and technology journalist, and in Silicon Valley and Austin, Texas, and other parts of the country. And, you know, I remember distinctly sitting in a room with other journalists and Steve Jobs of Apple when Steve stood up and told us, you know, someday soon you're going to have 1,000 songs in your pocket. You're going to be able to take pictures with your cell phone. And we all wrote that down as skeptical journalists while shaking our heads saying, yeah, whatever, someday, sure. I remember sitting with Jeff Bezos at Amazon back when Amazon was only selling books and not doing a very good job at that. And Bezos telling us, someday you're going to be able to buy anything you can possibly buy at a grocery store or any other store on my website. And you can do it from any place in the world. And we wrote that down as journalists and said, yeah, okay, sure, Jeff Bezos. I remember sitting with the Google guys and them saying something similar about being able to find anything and everything ever put on the internet from any computer in the world. And a lot of us not believing that. But Brett, look how quickly those things have really changed our world and changed our lives. Right now, clean energy, solar, wind, batteries, electric vehicles are in the same position as those technologies were back when I was covering that stuff 15 years ago. And think about how quick we can accelerate the adoption and the benefits that come with clean energy and reducing our carbon emissions. The technology is here. We just need the will to make sure that this happens quickly enough to avert the climate burning up our planet.
The other day when I was producing one of the other shows on our station called Native Roots Radio, one of their guests talked about how by the end of the 2020s, the sale of electric cars could end up outpacing the sale of gas-powered cars. And I think that's an example of an industry where we are seeing some quick change in terms of technology. How do we move that fast on adopting and even accepting electric cars as kind of part of our society? Because I think that is a good example where we have started to make some real big progress in terms of trying to move off of fossil fuels and moving towards cleaner energy.
Right, right. Well, you know, again, I have to harken back to my days covering technology. And if you remember back in those back 15, 20 years ago, everybody was talking about digital music, for instance. There were companies like Napster and Snapster and all of these other companies that were trying to figure this out. Apple figured it out. And when they did, everything changed. When you think about internet search engines, you know, remember the Mozillas and the Ask Jeeves and all these other search engines that were around back then trying to figure out how to do this. Google figured it out. With electric vehicles, companies have been flirting with them for a long time, but they never invested or really tried to build that market until Tesla came along. Tesla came along, by the way, thanks in part to a loan guarantee from the Department of Energy that they paid back ahead of time, by the way. But that really sparked the electric vehicle industry, and now every single car maker is following that because they realize that electric vehicles work better. They're cooler to drive. They go far as we need to, and they're going farther every day. They're cheaper to operate, especially when you think about the cost of gasoline right now. And it's what consumers want.
We're speaking with Bob Keefe. He is the author of the new book, Climatenomics, Washington, Wall Street, and the Economic Battle to Save Our Planet. You can get that wherever books are sold, including the locally owned Next Chapter Booksellers. So you have had a chance over the years, Bob, to talk with a number of lawmakers at the state and national level about climate change and clean energy. And I'm curious how the thinking has changed, both over the long term and the short term, because oftentimes climate change has been framed as a very partisan issue. Democrats are for making changes. Republicans want to pretty much stay with the same type of energy policy that we have now. But I think there has been some changes where we have had Republicans starting to accept climate change and know that change needs to happen. So talk about how the thinking has changed over the years, or maybe it hasn't changed. I'm interested with your perspective on this, talking to lawmakers at both the national and state level over the years.
Well, whether the thinking has changed or not, certainly the circumstances have changed. Look, climate change is no longer something just happening in the Arctic or on some faraway Pacific island. It's happening in all of our backyards. It's happening with hurricanes that are causing billions of dollars of damage each and every year on the East Coast. It's the wildfires that are already raging in parts of the West and are only going to get worse that are costing billions of dollars for taxpayers. Politicians cannot continue to think about climate change without thinking of it as something that's impacting our economy, because it's taxpayers who have to pay the bills for all of this. In the past 5 years, we've had three of the most expensive wildfires in our country's history. We've had four of the most costly hurricanes in our country's history. We've had the most expensive freeze in this country's history in Texas, nearly $200 billion in property damage. We have the most expensive thunderstorm-related event, the derecho or bomb cyclone that hit Iowa and Indiana a couple years ago that cost $7.5 billion in damage. So this is happening in every lawmaker's backyard. The good news is the growth in clean energy and the clean energy jobs that come with it are growing in every single state as well. You know, one of the things my organization does is track clean energy jobs around the country. And what we know now is that across the country, there are about 3 million people now work in clean energy. That's in solar and wind, but it's also energy efficiency. It's building those electric vehicles we've been talking about. It's producing cleaner fuels, et cetera. And in Minnesota, that also translates into tens of thousands of jobs as well. So as lawmakers begin to look at this, they have to realize that, look, this isn't about polar bears. This isn't even about science. It's not whether you drive a pickup truck or a Prius. This is about the bottom line for our states, for taxpayers, for the businesses in those states.
I want to switch the focus now to going a little bit more international, because obviously right now we see Russia at war with Ukraine. And I know Russia is one of the nations that is experiencing climate change perhaps even faster than a lot of other countries in the world. And what has me afraid, and I know this has been talked about for years, is that eventually we could get to the point where we could see climate wars if we don't move fast enough on engaging with climate change and trying to get on cleaner fuels and making sure we're not relying on fossil fuels and those types of things. Could we get to a point where we could see more types of climate wars in the future if we don't take appropriate action now? Because I'm afraid that's something we could see happen eventually.
So if you look at how climate change is impacting countries around the globe, it's resulting in things like increasing food prices, in food scarcity. It's what the U.S. Department of Defense calls a threat multiplier, climate change is. So we're seeing this play out in the Middle East already, in places like Syria, in other places around the globe. So there is a national security component as well to climate change and the costs that come with climate change. Fortunately, the military realizes this now and is taking steps to address it.
And final question for you, but what do you hope people take away from reading your book? Again, we are speaking with Bob Keefe, author of the book Climatomics, Washington, Wall Street, and the Economic Battle to Save Our Planet. What do you hope people take away from reading your book?
Well, the main takeaway is that climate change is no longer just an environmental issue. It's no longer just a social issue. It's no longer just a health issue. It's all of those things, of course, but it's also a serious economic issue. And addressing that is a serious and great economic opportunity. We can take steps now to blunt the growing costs of climate change by reducing the carbon emissions we're pumping into the air and turbocharging these climate disasters that we're experiencing on an increasing basis now. We can do that by shifting to cleaner energy, to cleaner vehicles, and in doing that, we can create a lot of jobs, we can drive economic growth, and we can invest in America's future.
We'll encourage you to get the book, Climatomics, Washington, Wall Street, and the Economic Battle to Save Our Planet. Very important to try to connect climate change to the economy, because climate change does have a massive impact on our economics and how we do function financially here in our country and, of course, around the world as well. And you can get Climatomics wherever books are sold, including the locally owned Next Chapter Booksellers in St. Paul. We have been speaking with Bob Keefe. He is the executive director and of the national nonpartisan business group E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs, and of course the author of Climatomics. Bob, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.